Okay, I thought this week we'd keep it slightly lighter than last week. Not that last week was good, it was challenging, but I want to share with you an idea today in Chassidus based on the Rebbe's Sicha that he once spoke at a Fabrinian of Vav Tishrei, the 6th of Tishrei, which is his mother's Yahrzeit, Rebbe's and Chana. And he spoke about the Haftorah of Chana that we read on Rosh Hashanah. The concept is well known, but I wanted to see, go through it in depth, how he goes through it. And a very, very fundamental idea. I've learned the Sicha many, many, many times, only because I normally try to learn it for Rosh Hashanah, because it gives a fundamental perspective on how davening works on Rosh Hashanah. I think it's a very important idea. So let's just, first of all, I didn't actually copy the actual Sicha because it's in Yiddish, and I'm not sure I don't know if it's good enough for anyone, but it's probably printed somewhere in Hebrew, I just don't know where, but in the... Sorry? Yeah, is that okay? So we know that the second day, first day of Rosh Hashanah, sorry, we read the Haftorah of Chana, the famous story of Chana. The reason is because Chana has a connection to Rosh Hashanah. Let's just read the Gemara, a couple of different sources, so we'll read through them. Let's have a look at number one on your handout. It's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Dafyat Aleph. Gemara says like this: Rosh Hashanah, Nifkada, Sora, Rachel, Vachana. Rosh Hashanah, there were three women who were answered, their prayers were answered, and they were remembered by Hashem, so to speak, and that's Sora, Rachel, and Chana. So we read all of them on Rosh Hashanah. We read the first Torah reading on the first day is about Sora, the Haftorah is about Chana, and the second day, the Haftorah is about Rachel. Right? Now, how do we know this? Says the Gemara in the following. Minnola, how do we know this? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar says like this. So just to give you background, you know, sometimes in Gemara we have this idea of Gzeira Shava. We have two identical words in two places and they connect two parshas together, right? So do a double one over here. Asya Pekido Pekido. We find the language of remembering twice in two different portions. And Asya Zechira Zechira. We find the language of remembering Zechira, also one of them. Also in two places. What is this? Ksiv, Barachel. By Rachel it says, by Rachel it says, Vayizkor Elohim bis Rachel. That Hashem remembered Rachel. Uksiv Bachana, and Bachana also says, Vayizkoreho Hashem. And Hashem remembered it. So they connected. Then, Vyaso Zechiro Zechiro Rosh Hashanah. Then we also use the word Zechiro for Rosh Hashanah. The Ksiv as it's written. Right? Shabbosoin Zichroin Chua. It says about Rosh Hashanah that it's the day of Shabbat, day of rest. Zichroin Chua, remembering the Chua. Okay. So there we know, therefore, that's how we know that Chana and Rachel were both remembered on Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah says Zichroin, and by Chana and Rachel both says the word Zichroin. Then what we do is we connect Chana and Sarah using the word Pekida. Which is Pekidah, Pekidah, Pekidah. Ksiv Bachana. It says Bachana, ki Pokad Hashem is Chana. That Hashem had remembered Chana, using the word Pokad. Ksiv Besara, reads the word and uses it by Sarah. But Hashem Pokad es Sarah, Hashem remembered Sarah. Yeah? That's the Gemara. I just copied one more line, just as an interesting point. The Gemara also says, nothing to do with what we talk about, but it's interesting. But Rosh Hashanah Yotzo Yosef mi Beis Asurim. On Rosh Hashanah, Yosef came out of jail. You know that story of Pharaoh's dreams, and they yanked Yosef out of jail, and he was put before Pharaoh, and he had to interpret the dreams, and that all happened on Rosh Hashanah. Right? In fact, I saw somewhere a discussion, it says in the Pasuk that they took Yosef out of jail, they gave him a haircut, they changed his clothing, and the question was, how could he have a haircut on Rosh Hashanah? If it was Rosh Hashanah, how could he have a haircut? So, anyway, it's not such a big halachic shaila because before Matan Torah and also, but it's interesting shaila this. Okay. Good. So what's the story of Chana? Let's have a look at number two. So we read about a person, his name was Elkanah. This was during the time, just to give a clarity, during the time of Mishkan Shiloh, right? And it was a person called Elkanah. And it says number two, V'loy shtei noshim, this Elkanah had two wives, Shem Achas Chana, the one name was Chana, Shem Ashenis Penina, the second was Penina. But he Lipnino Yeladim, Pnino had children, Ulachano Ein Yeladim, and Chana not have any children. Then the Pasuk, I didn't copy all the Pasuk, but the Pasuk says that he would go up to Shiloh each year. This was his thing. He would go after Shiloh, the Mishkan Shiloh. In fact, there's a fascinating medrash that says each time he would take a different route, go through a different town, he would gather people and try and convince them to come to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan with him. This was before even the first Beis HaMikdash, right? And he inspired people to come with him and to be part of this experience, right? Okay. So they would go up, and each time they would daven, and anyway, it was many years, and Chana wasn't answered. One time they came up, and obviously it was Rosh Hashanah, and she was very upset, Chana. She didn't eat from the Karbonis, and Elkanah asked her why, and so on. Anyway, she went and she stood in front of the Mishkan, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and she davened, right? And the pasuk says the following. Let's read through the pasuk. In number 3, it says, "V'chana hi medaberes al libo." Chana was talking to her heart. She was like talking quietly. Raks faseo noise. Her lips were moving. V'koylo lo yishomea, but her voice could not be heard. Incidentally, this was not the practice until then. We do this with the Amidah, and we learn it from Chana. But actually, that wasn't the way it was done. People used to daven loud. Therefore, this was an unusual practice, which explains a little bit the next phrase. And it says, "Vayachshaveo Eli l'shikoyra." Eli thought she was drunk. Skip the next line. Pasuk Yudalit. "Vayomer Eileo Eli." So Eli said to her, "Ad mosai tishtakor." What kind of nonsense is this? Why are you gonna? Until when? Why intoxicated? Hasiri es yeinech me'oloyech. Go and remove. Sober up. Get out and here. Sober up. Vata and Chana, and Chana answered. Vatoimer, and she said, "Loi oid adoni, no, my master. Ishak shasruach anoichi. I'm an embittered woman. V'yayin v'sheicher loishak sisi. I do not drink wine or beer or whatever. And v'eshpoich es nafshi lifnei Hashem. I'm pouring out my heart before Hashem." Okay. So he says, okay, you will be blessed, you've been answered, you will have a child, and because she promised that she'll bring the child back to Hashem, she had a child. He was Shmuel, he became Shmuel Hanavi, and she took him back, and he grew up with Eli, and Eli educated him, and then he had a Nevuah, and he became Shmuel Hanavi. Right. Okay. So the Rebbe says, first of all, puts before the following idea. Number one, why do we read this? Obviously, we read it because of Chana, but why do we? But there must be a lesson. In other words, there's no such thing. We just read Haftorah because it mentions Chana, and Chana was answered on Yom Tov. Okay, there must be that this Haftorah provides for us a lesson, a kind of teaching that is relevant to the whole theme of Rosh Hashanah. Okay, that's number one. So he says like this: we have to understand the story. And he asks a number of questions. First of all, how is it possible for Eli to have such a mistake? Eli was a great tzaddik, number one. He was a kohen gadol. I mean, there are things that the pasuk says he didn't do properly, he didn't educate his children properly, whatever the case is, but he was a great man, right? Tzaddik. He was a kohen gadol, right? Why did he couldn't tell that she wasn't drunk? I mean, it's not that hard to tell a drunk person. She was a woman davening, that's all. I mean, whatever. Right? Number one, first question. Incidentally, the Rebbe doesn't bring this, but there's a famous idea that what Eli actually did was he consulted the Urim V'Tumim, you know, that the Kohen Gadol wears the breastplate. And sometimes the Kohen Gadol could ask things. This is before, not the second Mishkan, it didn't happen, but during the Mishkan and during the second. So he consulted, and the letters are mixed up and they shine up, and then you have to decode them, right? So he had the word Shikoira. Shikoira is Shin Chof Reish, eh? And he thought that meant drunk. And it actually wasn't, it meant kashera, she's kosher, or kasara, she's like Sarah, she'll have a child. Which Eli only realized later when she said, "I'm not drunk, I'm just davening." Then he said, "If that's the case, that's I made a mistake, it was kasara or kashera, and you'll have a child," right? Yeah. It was there from Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? One of the things that were hidden in the second Beis HaMikdash, the breastplate was still there, but the name of Hashem on the parchment wasn't there anymore. So, but still, okay, even with this Urim V'Tumim story, it's a very nice story, but how come? How come he suspected? I mean, you're not supposed to suspect someone if there's a way out. Like, there's two alternatives. Why do you choose that alternative? Why do you choose the kosher alternative, right? That's very good. Second question is, even if we should find some sort of explanation why Eli would suspect her of being drunk, right? What does the Torah have to say? The Torah doesn't talk negatively about people, and this is a reason. Right? Torah is not a history book. Torah doesn't tell stories. It's not nice. I mean, one would imagine that it's a weakness of Eli that is suspected of being drunk when she was a tzaddik is davening, right? So why would the Torah tell us the story? Unless there's a very fundamental lesson here. Okay. Third of all, he asked me a very practical question. If Eli thought she was taka drunk, so why did he wait till she's finished davening? He's watching her davening. He says he's observing her. She's davening, davening. And in his mind, she's a drunk woman, babbling on. So why did he wait? Why did he just call the security and get out of there and finished? Right? Wait till she finishes davening and say, come here, why are you drunk? That's ridiculous. Good question. So the crux of the answer, the way the Rebbe explains it, is we know, is that he didn't suspect her of being drunk in the alcoholic sense. He didn't for 1 second think she was intoxicated. He knew exactly what she was doing. She was davening. However, we'll see, and we'll see why this is, he suspected of being drunk is a term that can be used for anything in excess. Right? People talk about being drunk in happiness, like just so happy, like, right? He thought that she was drunk in the way she was davening. Her davening was excessive. Now, we need to see why should davening be excessive? Because davening is a good thing, right? Okay, but he didn't think it was good. Especially when you're standing at the Mishkan, especially when you're standing before Hashem. And when she said that she's not drunk, but she's pouring out her heart to Hashem and for Hashem, he accepted that. We need to understand what was going on there. Okay. So, the Rebbe introduces the following question. A very fundamental question, which really is a question every day, but more so on Rosh Hashanah, as we'll soon explain. On Rosh Hashanah, the Rebbe introduces this paradox that we find running through the davening. A seeming contradiction. On the one hand, we say Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin, is the day of judgment, right? Which means we are judged and Hashem decides what's going to happen to us during the year. Rosh Hashanah, you can save him. And there's a din and mishpat, there's a judgment on Gashmis and Ruchnis, both. All our needs from the coming year. Choikli Yisrael, the Gemara says choik that Tikku b'choy de shofar ki choikli Yisrael, it's a day of choik, and the Gemara translates the word choik as food, sustenance, right? That's true. And therefore what happens is, right, therefore what happens is, our davening is full of requests for physical success, our own needs, and spiritual needs, but a lot of physical needs. We have a long list of shopping, a long shopping list, right? We daven for a fuah, we daven for this, we daven for that, all of the stuff that we need in the coming year, we continue to zachrein l'chaim, kosvein v'seif l'chaim, v'seif l'chaim, bracha v'sholem, parnosa toiv v'yishua l'chama, all these things, right? We keep on doing it. Yeah, but there were other, Avinu Malkeinu came before. Why do we add it later? Obviously it was. No, I mean it was added later because it used to be that people davened their own davening. But obviously we see by the way davening was structured later, this was very important. Right? I mean, otherwise why would you do it, right? So we do. Avinu Malkeinu is not for that. Those things you said were added later, that comes from the time of the Goinim. Right? But Avinu Malkeinu comes way before. Avinu Malkeinu comes from Rabbi Akiva. Right? Mm-hmm. Rabbi Akiva was not long after davening was made. Right? It's all part of the development of davening. Avinu Malkeinu also goes through all the physical things, right? So it's obviously appropriate on some level. That's what we should do in Rosh Hashanah. However, the problem with this like this, it seems to completely contradict the theme of Rosh Hashanah. Because at the end of the day, we know that the nekuda, the point of Rosh Hashanah is the concept of Tamlichuni Aleichem. Explained this a bit last week, right? We have to crown Hashem as king. Especially according to the way it says in Chassidus, that just before Rosh Hashanah, Hashem withdraws his desire to be a king. Hashem is not interested anymore. He uses kaviyochel, whatever that means. He loses his motivation. It's up to us to call out, to draw down from a very, so to speak, deep place within Hashem's existence, the desire and the pleasure to be our king. How does that work? So we know. Chassidus is all over this. Chassidus explains this, right? It works by complete bittul. The king is, Let me explain it a bit. Maybe we didn't explain so much last week, but let me explain it. You see, a king, by definition, even a physical king. An example of this is to go back to the very first king, which actually Shmuel HaNavi appointed. Shaul HaMelech, right? Shaul HaMelech, it says about him, it doesn't bring in the sikh of him, just explaining. Shaul HaMelech says about him, Meshichmoy Ulamailo Gavoya Mikolom, that he was head and shoulders above all the other people. It says it in a physical sense. He was taka tall. Shaul HaMelech was exceptionally tall. His shoulders were above the heads of everyone else, right? That's what it says about him. What does that mean, begashmius? It means it's a reflection of how he was beruchnius. That his, you know, v'asri ha'ahed is seichel, right? We have our midas, which is the heart, right? Supported by the shoulders. Our midas is lower than our seichel. Seichel is higher than midas, right? Shaul HaMelech, even his midas were higher than the common person's seichel. That's how great he was, right? Because a leader, someone who's really essentially a leader, I'm not talking about a politician who's dumb, I'm talking about a real leader, right? The king of true king. Is someone who's head and shoulders above the rest of the people, which gives him the qualification to be king, but it also makes him resistant to being a king. Because the king, even a physical king, how much more so we talk about a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? Even a physical king, a true leader like Shaul HaMelech, he didn't want to become king, because the king is it's a yirida, it's a descent, it's why should you have to deal with people who are much lower than him? It's much better off than going somewhere in a corner and learning and being involved himself in very lofty and high ideals. Sometimes it's very, you have to convince a real king to be a king. It's much easier for him not to be a king. To be a king means he has to descend to the level of a nation. That's what leadership is. You've got to engage with the people. Right. That's true with sometimes in people, how much more so is true with Hashem? The relationship between Hashem and the world is malchus, but that malchus is a yerida, it's a descent for Hashem. Right? Okay, he chose to want to do it in the beginning of creation, but if later on every Rosh Hashanah he loses interest, and as soon as explained, doesn't just lose interest operationally, he loses interest till the very, he loses complete interest, no motivation. Goes back to the very depth of his tainug and his ratzin, as we explained last week. So, why should he be king? The only way to do it, to make him king, is the only way a king becomes king is if the nation come to him and completely give themselves over to him. We're not going to stand in your way, we're not going to drive, you know, we're going to be your soldiers, we're going to be yours. What we call complete bittul and Kabbalah soil. That is the theme of Rosh Hashanah. Kabbalah soil, Kabbalah samalchus. Right? Shofar is complete giving over. Surrender, total surrender. Right? So the question is, if we talk about being in a state, in a context of complete bittul, so you're in a matzav, if you're standing and you're completely bottled, that's when you think about your personal needs. That's when you're worried about your bank account, your even good things, I mean, whatever. Right? That's, I mean, you bittle or you think about yourself. Which one we got to choose, right? And by the way, the Zohar actually says something like that. The Zohar says, listen to this, that people who ask on Yom Kippur, on Yom Kippur, the same thing about Yom Kippur, by the way, they ask for mezoina, slicha, kapora, sustenance, forgiveness, life, kosveinu l'chaim, the Zohar says they're like dogs who scream, hav, hav. Like dogs who scream, give, give. That's what it says, right? Because they think about it themselves, they're not thinking about the Shekhinah. Right? However, on the other hand, we see that these personal requests are in davening. If they're in davening, they must be there, right? In other words, it must be part of the Ratzon Hashem. It must be part of what Hashem wants. He wants us to ask for them. So what's going on? Now the Rebbe puts in a very interesting, almost parenthesis, not parenthesis, I'm saying, by the way, he says the truth is this question is not only Rosh Hashanah. You could ask this question every single day. Why? Because you know, I'll just explain a bit what he was referring to. You know that davening, we daven every day, right? So you know that the Chassidus explains very, very often this idea that when Yaakov Avinu was running away from Esau, right, when he stopped over at the Har HaBayis and he lay down to sleep and he had this dream, and he says, "V'hine sulam mutzav arzo, roshem magia shemayim." It was a ladder firmly on the ground and its head reached the heaven, right? Chassidus says that that's a metaphor for tefillah. Tefillah is a ladder. That's why Pikabola, tefillah has different sections. So you start off with Pesuk of the Zimra or Brochas, the Pesuk of the Zimra, then the Brochas of Shema, then Shema. And then Shmoneh Esrei. Shmoneh Esrei is the the ultimate, right? So when we wake up in the morning, we are like a ladder which is firmly on the ground. We're very much entrenched in earthliness. And then we start to daven, we move from one rung to another, and we climb up the ladder until we get to Shemoneh Esrei. By the way, after Shemoneh Esrei is a whole different thing on Pikabola. After Shemoneh Esrei, all the stuff we say after Namida is coming down again. It's bringing the Shekhinah down. Okay. What's Shemoneh Esrei? Shemoneh Esrei is the idea of tefillah. So yeah, it is true, on a halachic level, the definition of tefillah, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you look in the Rambam, Gemara, the definition of tefillah is bakashas tzrocha, you ask for your needs. But we have to understand this spiritually, because if we talk about tefillah being a ladder, where do we get to the highest level? In the Amidah. The Amidah is called Avdo Kamo Mori. It's like a servant in front of his king. That's why we're not supposed to move. We're supposed to stand in one place. Our feet have to be together. We're not look around. We're not allowed to do anything during the Amidah, right? Most of that, why? Because the Amidah, you're in front of the king. In front of the king, you don't move, right? Bittul, yeah? And where do we ask for all our personal needs? In Amidah, right? Which is also a bit strange, yeah? Same sort of thing. Now, he does point out that it's not such a question during the year, because it is true that during the year we are standing in front of the king, by the Amidah especially, right? But during the year, the king is already the king. In other words, he has a relationship with us already. What is that relationship at the end of the day? The relationship between the king and the people is the people do what the king wants them to do, and the king is responsible for providing for the people. That's the relationship, right? When a king becomes a king, there's a job description. It's not just you surrender to me. It's also, a king is not a dictatorship. It's different, right? Dictators do that. Dictators want complete bittul, but they don't want to give anything back, right? And they don't care what happens to the people. But the king's different. A proper king means he provides. But the Gemara says that David HaMelech wakes up in the morning, the whole beautiful Gemara in Brachos where tells about David HaMelech's schedule, and that he wakes up in the middle of the night, and there's a harp, and he wakes up, and he learns Torah, and until he comes in the morning. And the morning, suddenly people approach him, and they said, there's not enough food. The budget is, there's inflation, it's running low, right? That's what a king is. Okay, so then, even if you're standing in front of the king, but you're already his subject, good, so you have bittul, you're going to be surrendered to him, but you also have the authority, I mean, not the permission to ask for things. Because that's what the relationship is on an operational level. But when you're talking about Rosh Hashanah, Hashem hasn't become king yet, so to speak, right? I mean, there's something called Chitzonius HaMalchus. Famous Kashi Chassidus, that how does the world exist if Hashem, because we know that Hashem withdraws his kingship from the world before Shkia and Erev Rosh Hashanah, and then only comes back through the Maira of Rosh Hashanah and through the Musa, the Tzkiyas and the Musaf and everything, right?
So that means he will have to wait an extra day?
Sorry?
Is he will have to wait an extra day?
No. You have to listen to last week's share. Yes, listen, no, because this year it's done without Shofar, through Shabbos, through our Bittul, it's even deeper Bittul, whatever. Okay, but, no, so Shabbos does what Shofar is supposed to do. Okay, but, so the question is, how does the world exist then? So Taka, the world is very weak. We don't see it because we don't see lots of things, but there were great tzaddikim and great people who Taka, they were very nervous from when Rosh Hashanah came in until after the Musaf on the first day. Because it was like, there's a weak existence, like, because right? Hashem keeps it going, but it's very external, it's not like he's involved, right, so to speak. He's always involved, but he's not. So when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, Hashem isn't even king yet. There, the approach has to be total surrender. You're not negotiating with him yet. It's not an operational relationship yet. You need total bittul, right? So total bittul. So what are you asking of Vinam Akenu, Kasvenu? Just give yourself up. It's finished. Not about you. Just. So the answer is like this. In truth, why does a Yid ask for Gashmius? Why? Why did Hashem create the world in the first place? In other words, why did he entertain the idea of being a Melech in the first instance? Right? Now, let's go back a second. Let's bring this in the Sikha, but let's just explain this. If Hashem decided to be the king at the very beginning of the creation, so why did he stop in the middle? Like, you start a job, finish it off. Like, why does he withdraw it, right? The answer is because Hashem had a desire, as we know, a very deep desire, called, as the Medrash says, Nis'aveh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem had a desire to make a dira b'tachtoyim, to make a dwelling place down here below, right? For there to be him and there, for there to be a below, below means a world of, which is a very low madrega. The only way that can happen is through the relationship of melech. Melech means he's higher, but he leads us and he makes through the process of tzimtzum and he gives us what we need to exist. That's the relationship of melech, right? Okay. Why does Hashem want to be, want to have a dira b'tachtoyim? We don't know. The lashon, the expression that says in the Medrash is nis'aveh HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem had a desire, right? A taiva. You know what taiva is? Like a taiva. You ever had a taiva? I mean, we all have taivas, right? Sometimes a taiva to eat chocolate, right? So the Alter Rebbe says that af a taiva frek mishkan kashas. You can't ask a question on a taiva. A taiva is I want, finished. The only thing is most of our taivas are just nonsensical taivas. Still can't ask a question on them, they're just desires, but they lower their intellect, they lower their rationale. If you think sometimes with that type is, if you think a little bit, we know we would understand that they're pretty stupid. Okay. But with Hashem it's all the way around. Hashem type is, what does it mean Hashem at a type? It means it's coming from something very deep which is higher than anything. It's Hashem's essence. It's higher than explanation, higher than rationale, higher than everything. It's just right. It's something that Hashem is part of who Hashem is. It's his essence. Because he has that taiva, therefore, that taiva then translated in a rotzen, in a desire to be a melech and a tainug and so on. However, part of that desire is, right, I think I've explained this before, this is a very important idea. We talked about it last week, but I'll just, in this context. Part of having a dira b'tachtoinim, right, part of having a dwelling place in this world, is not pshat that Hashem wants to live here and he's going to move in. Dira b'tachtoinim doesn't only mean that Hashem's presence is in this world. It means that this world is the one that facilitates Hashem's presence. Right? Hashem didn't want to just move into this world. He wanted this world to invite him in. Right? Which is why on the very first day of creation, Hashem revealed his malchus. But that was the only time Hashem did that. Ki chafetz chesed. That was the creation of chesed. But then every single year Hashem says, no, you need to make me the melech. That's part of the kavanah, part of the intention of creation. I want a dira b'tachtoinim, but dira b'tachtoinim by definition means that you have to invite me. You have to crown me as a king. So what does he do every Rosh Hashanah? He gives up. He says, no, I'm done. You want back? You invite me. And he comes back in a greater way. There's a new aura, a new light every Rosh Hashanah. But you have to do it, right? So when a yid davens, and a yid is bottled to Hashem, and he exercises bittul and gives himself over to Hashem on Rosh Hashanah, in order to make Hashem king, it's all for the purpose of doing what Hashem really wants at the very, very greatest level to dwell in this world. We are crowning Hashem as king because we are giving ourselves over to Hashem completely. We're surrendering to Him, to His essence in the most deepest and powerful way to do what He wants, which is dira b'tachtoinim. So when a yid davens to Hashem and he says, Meloich ala oilom, by the way, how's it work? It works, first of all, the way it works, it says, explains it, is that we ask Hashem to become our king, and through us to make him king over the world. It's not enough for him only to be our king, because that doesn't achieve dira b'tachtoinim, right? Dira b'tachtoinim means we want him through us to be the king of the entire universe. That is malchus. By the way, it's very beautiful. You understand this concept, you understand the wording of the davening. Beautiful. I mean, the bracha malchus is obviously a beautiful bracha. We say, Meloich ala oilam kula b'chvedecha, reign over the whole world. And we say, V'yeida kol pol ki ato pe'alto, let every thing that exists know that you made them. V'yovim kol yitzur, everything that's formed should understand that you formed them. V'yovim rakal ashrei neshama ba'apa, everything that has a soul should say, Hashem elokei Yisrael melech. You the king, right? Otherwise, the world should understand Hashem's kingship. That's dira b'tachtoinim. How does it happen? We all have a part of the world that we need to deal with. It's called chilka. We have our own nefesh habamis, first of all. We have our own animal soul for which Hashem has to become the king of. That's step one. And step two is we all have parts of the physical world that have these sparks, these godly sparks that we have to reveal and redeem and that they should feel godliness, right? So when we come to Hashem and we crown him as king on Rosh Hashanah, we give ourselves over, we surrender with complete surrender. What are we doing it for? To make a dira b'tachtoinim, to what Hashem wants. Ah, to make a dira b'tachtoinim, we need the tools. We need to be healthy, right? We need to be healthy, we need parnosis, so we can give tzedakah, we need food so we can eat and exist, right? Like it says in Tanya, to eat properly, in the Shem Shemayim, at least a little bit, you know, as much as we can. We need a house to live in, we need things to be able to make a right of mezuzah and work, all these things. If you don't have health and parnasa and everything, we can't make a derivative tachtoni, we're limited. So in a year, it's not really a stira, it's not really a contradiction, right? It's not really a contradiction, it's an expression of our deep pittle. The expression of our deep dipple in Rosh Hashanah is to say to Hashem, we want it for you. We're asking these things for your sake because we want to make a derivative tachtoni. Why does that happen specifically on Rosh Hashanah? Because, as I said before, this on Rosh Hashanah we know we reveal mima'amakim karasicha Hashem. We call Hashem from the very depths of our heart, right? So we are giving ourselves over to the very depth of Hashem, to His innate deepest desire, deepest tayin, which is to make a derivative tachtoni. In order for that, we have to make Him melech. Where are we giving ourselves over from? Which part of ourselves? From the very deepest part of our neshama. We say the etzem of a yid connects to the etzem of Hashem. The essence of a yid connects to the essence of Hashem. And therefore, any request to make a Rosh Hashanah, including the ones from Parnassa and health and everything like that, where's it coming from? From the etzem of the yid, from the essence of the yid. What does the essence of the yid want? One thing, to be connected to the essence of Hashem and make a derivative tachtoni. So it's not a contradiction at all. Okay. Says the Rebbe, that's a very nice explanation. However, let's be real. Yod inish benafshe. Let's understand, not all of us come in Rosh Hashanah and only ask to pay the mortgage because we just want to make a derivative tachtoni. That's not the conscious reason. Let's face it, right? So if that's the case, we're back to square one. Right? Seemingly. Yeah? Back to square one? Because if we're not really holding there, it's a nice explanation if you're Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, maybe, right? But if you're not, we're still physical people, we get stressed out if the bills aren't paid, we get stressed out if someone's not well, Chas V'Sholem, if someone's having other challenges, we get stressed out, right? That's who we are. I mean, we're not, right? So then, how does this all fit in? How does it answer the question then? Then we're back to the contradiction. We come Rosh Hashanah, we're supposed to focus on our commitment, our surrender. In the meantime, we're focusing on ourselves. And it is ourselves because we're not exactly at this madrega. Right? So the Rebbe says two unbelievable things. First of all, he says, and look at your handout, he brings a famous concept from the Baal Shem Tov. I've mentioned this before in Tani Shi, actually. There's a chapter in Tehillim, Hoyd Hashem Gitoy, chapter Kuf Zayin, where David HaMelech goes out, he describes the four types of people that have to thank Hashem. The people who are in jail, the people who go through a sea, people who go through a desert, and the people who, whatever I said, who are sick, right? So he talks about people going through a desert, and they don't have anything to eat, and all that kind of stuff, and then they're saved, and they thank Hashem, right? The way he describes the people in the desert, he describes them the following way. Look at the pasuk. He says they are re'evim gam tzmeim, they are hungry and thirsty. Nafsham bohem tis'atov. Then the neshama is in this hunger, is wrapped in this hunger, clothed in this hunger. Right? Said the Baal Shem Tov, what does that mean? Hunger is a physical thing. You should say the hungry and thirsty, and they're just hungry and thirsty. What does it mean? The nefesh is in the hunger. Nefesh is a spiritual thing. Well, it's not hungry. Says the Baal Shem Tov like this. No. Every time a person is hungry, it's the neshama that's hungry. In other words, when you're hungry and you want a piece of cake or a piece of fish, right? So you want an apple. Your feeling is you're just physically hungry. You're hungry. You haven't eaten for a while. Nothing to do with Hashem. You're just hungry, right? Says the Baal Shem Tov is not true. That's superficial. Really? Really? Internally, the reason you're hungry is because your neshama wants to make a derivative tachtoni. Meaning your neshama wants to connect to a spark in that food and to elevate it. A godly spark. We have this idea of nitzutzes, and right, every food has nitzutzes. Right? Your neshama is in the hunger. Your neshama is actually triggering the hunger. You're not hungry because you're hungry. You're hungry because you want to elevate the food. You don't feel it. That's your problem. In other words, on a conscious level, you don't feel it. But really, you want to know why you're really hungry? Your hunger is really an expression of your neshama. So like this.
It's okay to
Sorry?
It's
okay to eat. No, because now how you implement the hunger is your choice. That's what happens. See, the neshama can't do it themselves because the neshama is spiritual and the neshama can't elevate the food, so the neshama triggers the hunger. The problem for the neshama is that it triggers the hunger in the nefesh habam. So now it's up to you how you're going to exercise the hunger. Are you going to eat it with the bracha and in moderation and only healthy things, and you're going to make a dirv tachtonim, and you're going to do it for the sake of Hashem, or you're going to eat like a behemoth? So that's okay. So that's our conscious choice. But really, why are we hungry in the first place? Is that same thing in Rosh Hashanah? Are you less to know that when you ask for kosvein lebesefer chaim tovim, when you ask for parnasa v'chalkala, all these things, the real reason you're asking for it is because your etzem and neshama wants to make a dirv tachtonim. That's why you ask for it.
Very
hungry.
Sorry?
No, it's the truth. That's really why you're asking for it. That's why you're hungry for the parnasa. Not just because you're stressed out because you can't pay bills. You really ask Hashem because you want to make the Ritachet. We'll get to it in a second. Sorry, what was that?
Just stick to the tefillahs and not ask for anything outside the
tefillahs. No, you can ask whatever you want. I'll tell you what you have to do. The Rebbe's going to explain, right? However, the Rebbe explains that it's not enough just to say, oh, really inside, that's why I'm asking for it. He says, our avoida of Rosh Hashanah is that we should ask for the physical things, but we should work on ourselves to bring, as much as we can, to bring that innate reason, the real central reason, to the forefront of our conscious thinking. We should try. We should remind ourselves that's really why we want it. Shouldn't just go off on a tangent and just ask whatever you want. Okay, we learned in the Sikha once that really I'm doing it for the right reason. That's not good enough. Because what's in essence has to become begol, it has to be revealed on some level. And that's part of the avoida bittul. Part of the avoida is to express a bittul in that way. Right? How do we do that, particularly before we daven musaf? We do that by reading the story of Chana. And this is why we'll explain why the Torah, we'll explain all the questions we said before. And also why the Torah told us the story. Just like this. It's exactly what happened with Chana. Chana went and she was standing in the highest of places in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. She was davening. Davening excessively, actually, right? She was davening for a very good thing. It wasn't even for chocolates. She was davening for a child. That's a pretty noble cause, right? But at the end of the day, Eli's observing her. She's in front of the king, like it's Rosh Hashanah. And she's in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And she thinks, no, this is drunkenness. It's excessive tefillah. Why? Because although she's davening for something really good, she's davening for a child, but at the end of the day, it's her need. This is not the time and place. That's what he says. It's not the time and place. It's shikrus. It's drunkenness. It's excessiveness. You're standing in front of Hashem. Your focus has to be Hashem now. Not your own need, even a need like having a child. It's your need at the end of the day. It's a human need. It's a motherly need, it's a very beautiful need, but it's bad, right? Especially for a mother, you know, that's why, you know that, right? It's interesting that the mitzvah of having children is only on the man, you know that? You read that? Pru Revu. It's a mitzvah on the man, not on the woman. Why? Because a woman doesn't need a mitzvah. Right? Men have to be commanded that it's a mitzvah, you have to have children. Women don't need to be commanded to each other, because it's part of them. But at the end of the day, it's their need, it's a need of the human being. So he approaches Chana and he says, Ad Mosai Tishta Korun, why are you drunk? This is not the time and place. It's a legitimate need, it's a good thing, you should have him for all the kind of things, but to stand excessively with a beret salibo, you can't hear your voice, she's mumbling, she's crying, she's going on and on and on. So that's shikrus, that's drunkenness. So what does she say? She answers, if you look in the psukim, it's much beautiful. Look at the last pasuk, number 3. Vata'an Chana Vatoimer. Chana answers and she says, Lo yadoni, no, my master. Ishtok shasruach anoich, I'm a bitter woman, v'yayim v'sheich aloisho, sisi, this is not drunkenness. This is nothing to do with me. Why? V'eshpoi ches nafshi, I'm pouring out my soul, lifnei Hashem, for Hashem's sake. I want a child so he should make a dirib b'tachtoni. I want a child so I'm going to give him back to the Beis HaMikdash so he should grow up to be a Navi. I want a child so he should serve Hashem. That's what I want a child. That's my need. That's my wish, that's my need, that's my whole purpose. Oh, so Eli says, that's the case. You're okay? Good? Perfect, Hashem will answer you. Then it's not drunkenness, he agrees. Why do we read this story? Because on Rosh Hashanah we have the same problem, says the Rebbe. We come and we daven for all our personal needs. Then we ask this question, isn't it a contradiction to the Beatles? What do? We answer, yes, but deep down, my etzem and neshama only wants it for the right reason. But we have to bring it down to a revealed state. We have to consciously understand this and think about it. So Hashem gives us the voice of Eli. So we all have the Eli within us that starts to challenge us. And it's a good thing. And we should listen to that voice. So we read Haftorah and we read Eli. And Eli is not just a story in Haftorah. Eli is our voice within us. That's saying, who are you kidding? And that's a good voice to listen to Rosh Hashanah. To get ourselves thinking right. So the Eli within us says, are you drunk? Are you thinking about yourself? Very nice. And your etzem and neshama, that's fantastic. But on your conscious level, who are you thinking about? And Hashem sends us the Eli because He wants us to try and work on bringing not to stop asking for our requests, but to work on bringing out the essential reason to the forefront of our consciousness, so we can try and work on the answer of Chana, so we can have the conversation between Eli and Chana within ourselves, especially before we start Musaf. And that's how the davening goes. So that's true every day, but it's particularly Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I learned this as a bocher, the sikha, remember? And I've always thought, I don't know how people daven before the sikha. You know? Like, it's such a perspective on davening, it's like unbelievable. I mean, maybe we'll do this intrinsically, I don't know, but it's the most beautiful explanation of why we have chana before the thing, and also the whole perspective. And it's something to think about throughout the whole yantar. We should continue to ask. But we should also work on ourselves to know why we're asking. What are we going to use Hashem's brachas for? What's the purpose of those brachas? Is it that I should be successful physically? Or is it because, no, it's all about the Rebbe Tachten. So it's all about the Shechinah. It's all about Hashem. Yeah? You're thinking, right? Sorry? Yeah. Now, could we feed it like Chana felt it? Maybe not, but the word doesn't matter. It's like everything else we learn. At least we can have that mindset. At least we can develop that perspective. I once saw this word in a sefer, very bekitzur, but it actually fits into the words. We say Zochreinu L'chaim, right? One of the things we do this, right? We say Zochreinu L'chaim. Hashem remember us for life. Melech Chafetz B'chaim, the king of one's life. Because Sveinu B'sefer L'chaim, right? It's the book of life. L'man Chol L'kim Chaim, for your sake, living God. What's that last part? It's mamish this word, if you think about it. It says, Zochein l'chaim and l'chotz chaim, kosvein l'besev l'chaim, l'man chalakim chaim, it's for your sake. But we have to work on it. We have to work on it, developing that perspective. So in other words, the underlying theme of Rosh Hashanah still remains and is, tamlchuni aleich, making Hashem melech. Bittul to Hashem. And we have to work on ourselves that when we ask for our gashmistik things, it's an expression of that bittul. And try to bring that. That's the truth anyway. That's the vart of the Baal Shem Tov. That's why we do it anyway. Because that is the real reason we're asking for these things. That's the real reason why we should want these things. But the avoid of bittul that we have in Rosh Hashanah is to try bring that out from the hidden to the conscious. And we do that by reading the Haftorah of Eli. So we have the Eli voice in us as well, challenging a bit so we can develop on the answer of Chana. So that's the foundation of our tefillah throughout the whole period. Hey, I can only mark today.